You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to A's Plus, the San Francisco Chronicle's podcast on the Oakland A's and Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Chronicle A's beat writer Susan Slusser, and today our guest is former A's manager Art Howe. He'll talk to us about his hospitalization with COVID-19 recently and his thoughts on Major League Baseball potentially trying to open even in the midst of a pandemic, plus his time with Oakland. He'll reminisce. Delightful to have you on today, Art. We were all so worried about you when you were hospitalized recently with COVID-19. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling great, Susan. I'm back to normal, just a little, trying to build up my strength a little bit. And the only thing, I still don't have my taste buds. So I'm keeping my weight down that way.
How was that throughout that you didn't have it? Because people keep hearing that that's one of the symptoms is the taste and sometimes smell, I think, thing.
Yeah, well, both were gone for me. My smell seems to be coming back pretty well, but my taste buds still haven't come back. It's going on 2 months now.
Oh, my goodness. So what happened when you first got sick? Did you realize that that might be that you might have, you know, had been exposed to coronavirus at all? What happened and when?
No, it was a Sunday morning. I woke up and I had the chills, really bad chills. And I didn't think anything of it. And that evening, watching TV, I was still, you know, shaking and feeling cold. And I asked Betty if she was cold. And normally she's the one that's cold. And I'm sitting over there with a blanket on and I'm shaking like a leaf and she's perfectly fine. So I had a feeling something was going on, but I didn't know. It was COVID. Same thing happened the next day. And finally, my daughter came over and said on Tuesday, she said, come on, we're going to go get tested. So Betty, my daughter, and I went on a Tuesday to get me tested. And the next day, they called and said I was positive. So they had to go into quarantine for 2 weeks.
Gosh.
And my other daughter had to go into quarantine for 2 weeks because she had visited me on the weekend. So, and I was in isolation immediately. So I went to isolation in my daughter's room, and it just slowly but surely went downhill from there. I would take a shower, and I'd have trouble stepping over the tub to get back out. I'm so weak.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it really saps your strength. And I didn't have a cough for almost a week, but the following Sunday, I started to develop a little cough, and the next day was a little worse. And finally, Betty called an ambulance to come get me because I wasn't going in the right direction. And thank goodness she did, because when I got to the hospital, I found out I had pneumonia.
Oh.
And they started me on a hydroxychloroquine. What's it called?
Hydroxychloroquine,
yeah. The next day. And I guess, I don't know if that's what turned me around or whatever, but I started feeling slowly but surely a little bit better. I really, on about Thursday of that week, maybe Friday, I broke into a cold sweat, my whole body. And I was running a fever at that time, and my oxygen level was like 89 or 90. It's supposed to be 95 and above. So they told me until my fever was gone for 2 days and my oxygen level was at least at 95, they weren't letting me get out of the hospital. And finally, that did happen, and that's really what they were looking at.
Wow.
And you're on that drug for 10 days. You take two a day, one in the morning, one at night. So I finished that up at home. And within about a week after getting home, I was feeling much better. I was feeling good.
Wow. So you were in the hospital how long, all told?
5 days. I was in there 5 days.
Wow. And you were never on a ventilator? Were you on oxygen, anything like that?
No, they never put me on oxygen or a ventilator. But I was in there for the 5 days, and it was in ICU. So they kept me kind of separated from everybody else.
My goodness. So I know when you were diagnosed, there still weren't a lot of cases in Texas. It was pretty relatively rare. It's been, it sounds like there are far more cases in Texas now. How are people treating coronavirus and COVID there in Texas? Is it starting to be a little bit more of a topic there? How would you describe things?
I don't think it's a topic because I just went to Kroger's and I'd say 70% of the people in there didn't have a mask on.
Wow.
It really concerns me because they don't know what they're dealing with. But, you know, everything's open here, basically. You know, the restaurants are open. And, of course, they're still asking. They're only, like, bringing in 25% of capacity, and they're trying to spread people out. But it's amazing how many people are walking around with no mask.
Oh, my goodness. What do you have to do now since you've had it? Do you wear a mask, or do you take precautions, or do they consider that you might have a resistance to it now?
Well, that's what I'm going to find out this week. But I do wear a mask wherever I go once I'm out in public.
Good.
But I'm going to get checked for the antibodies this week.
Oh, good. Okay. That'll be interesting.
Resistance. Yeah.
And
so that's on my agenda.
None of your family ever wound up testing positive or having any symptoms, correct?
Correct.
Oh,
I mean,
that's
so thankful for that. Yeah, I was really, really thankful for that. Betty, you know, she was taking care of me, basically. She was quarantined in the rest of the house while I was in the one room.
Jeez.
And she would knock on the door when she'd bring food for me. But I couldn't eat. When I was in the hospital, I felt terrible because I'd order breakfast and I maybe eat one grape out of the on the whole plate.
Oh, geez, Art, how much weight did you lose?
16 pounds.
Oh, goodness, that's not how you want to do it.
No, not at all. But and the taste buds, I can't even describe what it's like not to have taste buds. Wow. I wouldn't wish that on anyone because everything just tastes like goo. And then your appetite, you know, right now, I get a little taste here and there. So I'm basically imagining what I'm eating.
Wow.
Because I've put on about 6 or 7 pounds since I've gotten home. So, that's about all I want to put on.
Yeah. You're trending in the right direction. I mean, maybe you're in Texas. Maybe go get the hottest possible Mexican food you can. Maybe you could taste that.
Yeah. I called my old dentist and I was telling him I was using a lot of mouthwash, you know, to try to kill all the germs or whatever in my mouth. And he said, if there's alcohol in it, don't use it. Because I told him, it's like my tongue's on fire when I use that stuff.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing to go through. And we're also sorry that you had to go through this, of course. But this gives you a unique perspective as baseball is now talking about trying to get back to work, potentially, and opening again. What are your thoughts, just knowing baseball, knowing clubhouse situations, dugouts? It's not a contact sport in the way that, say, the NBA is, but certainly there are times there are guys right next to each other or, you know, plays at bases and things. What are your thoughts on baseball trying to get started?
Well, they have to, you know, use the distancing as much as possible, wear masks while they're in the clubhouse or whatever, I would hope. You know, the Korean League, baseball league, they seem to be doing all right. And maybe they should find out exactly what they're doing over there, because at least they haven't reported any players having problems over there. And they've been playing for a month now.
Yeah.
So maybe it's possible to do. I just hope they're very, very careful. I've read just recently where like 5 Phillies have come down with a COVID and 3 of their staff also. So obviously, maybe they weren't really being cautious about it. You know, there's no way you're going to be wearing a mask when you're hitting, because you want to be able to breathe and whatever. But, you know, with Korea being able to do it, I would hope that Major League Baseball would, you know, keep everything as clean as possible, obviously, and use the distancing as much as possible. But, you know, this country needs baseball. They really do. It's the best sport going. I don't care what they say about football. But for me, baseball is number one, and I miss it. But at the same time, I don't want anybody to get this.
And you're speaking to somebody that had quite a football career, too. So that's saying something. So you feel like it might be doable to come back safely and maybe not too risky.
Well, I hope so. Yeah. Let's put it that way. I hope so. And if they put their heads together and figure out, you know, the best way to go about it. And obviously the clubhouse guys are going to be crucial, because they're going to have to try to keep everything clean as possible. You know, like during the game, maybe, you know, be in the clubhouse, scrubbing everything down, you know, using disinfectant on everything they can imagine the players would be touching. Mm-hmm. So it would be a big role for them, I think, more than anybody.
Yeah.
You know, the guys would really be asked to do an awful lot.
Yeah, and I know that they've talked in some of their safety proposals about eliminating, you know, some of the very more unsanitary aspects of baseball, spitting in the dugout, you know, using seeds, pitchers going to their hands. Is that doable, do you feel like? Especially going to their hand, it seems like that's almost like a instinctive thing at this point. It's such a habit.
It is, but yeah, if you have to, you have to. You know, if they make it a rule. Especially the seeds, you know, Matt Stairs would be in trouble if they weren't allowed to have seeds.
So definitely a good time for everybody to stop chewing tobacco, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Has anybody from MLB talked to you about your experiences and what you went through, and check in and kind of see what, you know, what somebody who in baseball who actually wound up with COVID went through?
No one has contacted me, and only a couple of reporters. That's about it.
Wow. You're listening to Art Howe on A's Plus. I also have a story about him at sfchronicle.com. You can get full digital access for less than a dollar at sfchronicle.com/pod.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Well, we've been talking to a lot of former A's during this kind of baseball shutdown time and catching up with people. And obviously you managed many of the A's best players of the last two decades. Can you tell us who jumps out to you from among all your players in that time and all those very good teams? Who were your very favorites? I know you'd probably be afraid to leave anybody out, but just off the top of your head, who were some of the guys that you really enjoyed a lot in the clubhouse?
Well, I mean, it's really unfair for me to even name anybody. Just about every one of them I thought the world of. But, yeah, you know, McGuire, when I was first there, the way he went about his work, and I know that, you know, he was under the vision of everybody. Mm-hmm. And he was talked about being traded and everything. But the way he handled himself in the clubhouse as a role model and always working hard on the field. I thought the world of Mark. I thought he did a tremendous job while he was there. And Jason Giambi, you know, Jason was a leader after Mac left. He did a whale of a job. Miggy, you know, you have to love Miggy, the way he played the game and how much energy he brought to the team. But there were just so many. And the big four or big three rotation, you know, those guys, Huddy, the way he battled and the way he went out there in the postseason with a bad hip and tried to win us a big game. You can't measure his toughness, and you know, the other two guys that were just outstanding. So, you know, our clubhouses to me were just ideal. Everybody seemed to get along. Everybody, we didn't need a team bus because they were all in a clubhouse by like two in the afternoon, 2:30, and having a good time. And when the time came to play the game, they strapped it on and gave me everything they had. And that's all a manager can ask. And I was really blessed with a great group of guys the 7 years I was out there.
You really were. You had such fun clubhouses and some colorful characters. I remember you had the Jason Isringhausen bullpen with their remote control cars and planes and, you know, some of that goofiness.
But that's what I tried to do. I tried to stay out of the clubhouse when they were doing that. I didn't want to ruin their fun.
That was a good bunch. Now, one of my next questions was going to be, and I think you might have given us a hint, who would you give the ball to in a really must-win type game? Obviously you had the big three there, so you got a lot of possibilities.
Oh, yeah. I did say, Huddy, how could you go wrong with that?
Absolutely.
Ball, especially the way he pitched for us.
Yeah, don't tell Zito or Mulder, but I would go with Huddy also.
He pitched the first, that final game of in 2000 to clinch it for us, and I remember it was a low, it was nothing going into like the sixth or seventh inning, and Huddy came in off the field. He just said, "Give me one run, guys. That's all I want." And I mean, we got three, I think, and that was a bonus. And even stand up.
You obviously had the four playoff teams and some really heartbreaking losses in some of those series. Like, just crazy stuff went on. Obviously, we've talked about the Giambi not sliding endlessly, and you know the base running in Boston and all of that. Well, which to you was of all of those teams was maybe the best team and the hardest loss?
Oof, man, they were all heart-wrenching losses. Yeah. Wow, they were all very good. I think I get them a little mixed up. When we lost, he hit a ball into his shin.
Jermaine Dye,
I think that group right there might have been our best team.
Yeah.
And when we lost Jermaine, you know, the last game or two games of that series, it was our three hitter, and that really hurt.
Yeah.
And I think it hurt, you know, subconsciously, it took away from us, you know, losing a quality player like Jermaine.
Absolutely.
But they were all great teams. Yeah, we could have, in my mind, we probably should have won all three of those first series that I was involved in. And, you know, a little miscue here, a little miscue there, and a mistake here and there. And that was the difference in all three series. And, yeah, I think they all went five, didn't they?
They did, yeah.
Three.
Yeah.
And I know we had the Yankees 2-0, and that's one we should have won.
Of course, everybody talks about the 20-game winning streak. That was one of the great accomplishments, really, in baseball in that time. How much fun for you was that, or was that extra stressful as a manager, knowing every game as it went along, there was more and more focus?
You know, I think it would have probably been easier for me if I was playing. As a manager, you know, you're putting the guys out on the field, and that's about all you can do is manage the game, but you can't really do a whole lot about the outcome of the game during it, you know, other than making pitching changes and maybe pinch hitting somebody here and there. But it's stressful to be sitting in a dugout and see your ace, Huddy, on the mound with an 11-0 lead. And you think we finally have a laugher, and it turned into anything but that. Because we had a pitch out of a bases loaded jam in the top of the ninth just to hold it at 11. And then, you know, getting the pinch hit home run was awesome. I mean, you know, I was so happy for our fans. That's what I was really happy for. They supported us so much. And when I first got there in Oakland, you know, we were losing almost 100 games a year, but they stayed with us and they rooted for us day in and day out. And finally, they had something to really cheer about. It was awesome. And like I said, I just wish we could have gone to the World Series and won it all for them.
Yeah, such good, really, really good teams. Now, everyone associates, I think, that 2002 team now a little bit with the Moneyball, the book and the movie. We've talked so many times, I think, that the portrayal of you in that movie is borderline libelous. How often do you hear about it? Because it was such, I mean, anybody that knows you or has been connected to you in any way knows you're, first of all, tremendous shape and a wonderful gentleman, and the relationship between you and Billy was nothing nearly what it was portrayed.
Right. The thing that hurts, though, obviously, is the portrayal of me in the movie. And it kind of makes me laugh because, you know, I believe it or not, I do get letters in the mail, you know, with my playing cards and whatever. And they write a little note all the time. And so many times they say, I really enjoyed Moneyball. And I think to myself, oh, man, if you only knew.
Yeah, that's not what I'm like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you wish you could say, well, you know, it wasn't quite. I wasn't quite like that.
Oh, yeah. Not even remotely. Not even remotely. That was even the book, I think you were misportrayed, to be quite frank. So, but yeah, that's so many factual issues with that.
Michael Lewis hit off too well.
Yeah. It was very unfortunate. Now, you went from the A's to the Mets, which obviously big fishbowl going from Oakland to New York. And that's a tough gig in New York. It's a team that's, you know, really in the spotlight and has struggled to win. What was that experience like for you, especially going from Oakland to New York?
Well, it's a learning experience, that's for sure. Yeah, I was amazed at all the negative press on the team. I know we weren't, you know, gangbusters there or whatever, but they were so wrapped up in things that were off the diamond rather than reporting what was going on the field. You know, we had some issues with the bullpen down there, and they just were very negative towards a lot of the players on the team, and I just couldn't get over that. And the fan reaction, believe it or not. You know, that's one thing out in Oakland. Every time opening day when we were announced on the field, and lined up, they cheered every one of the players. My very first year in New York, I had two of my players. This is opening day. We haven't even thrown a pitch yet. Our fans booed.
Oh, no.
Two of our own players. I mean, I'm talking 45,000 people booing. And Armando Benitez was one of them. He was my closer. And I'm thinking, geez, man, this poor kid, he hasn't even come in to try to save a game yet. In fact, during that early spring, I went out and to make a pitching change late, and we had like a 5-run lead in the ninth, and a kid named Jaime Cerda I brought in. I figured, what the heck, he can, you know, get three outs. We got a 5-run lead. Well, he gives up a couple runs, and there's somebody on base, so I've got to bring in our closer. And they open the gate in right field, and Armando breaks through, and at the same time, Jaime Cerda's leaving the mound. And I asked our catcher, Wilson, I said, who are they booing more, the kid that just gave up two or three runs or the guy I'm bringing in?
Oh, no.
And he laughed and says, I don't know, Skip. That's a good question.
That's not a good situation. Oh, no, that's terrible.
So that's the kind of thing that was going on in New York. They were the press was probably the one thing you have to really deal with there.
Yeah, a little different from Oakland. But I mean, you came into Oakland with a team that had low expectations, and by the time you left, you had one of the best teams in baseball. So I guess not really too many hard questions to have to ask, except for maybe after those playoffs.
The one thing I learned in New York, you don't rebuild.
Yeah.
And that's what I went there thinking we were going to do. Yeah, because they had lost 105 games a year before or something like that when I came in. And I'm thinking, well, you know, it's going to take us a few years, just like Oakland, and we're going to put together a good team and a possible playoff team. And immediately I found out they were not willing. I wanted to deal a couple guys, you know, that were veteran players on the team to get some good young players, you know, in the system and start looking to the future. And they didn't want any part of that.
Wow, you gotta at some point you gotta do something like that, right? With what's working's not working. That's
yeah. I remember I got there. I think we had $110 or $120 million payroll. I know it was over $100 million. Jeez. And when I left the A's, it was like a $35 million payroll. And I looked at my bench in New York, and every guy I had on the bench in Oakland was better than what I had on the bench in New York.
Boy.
What did they spend their money on?
That's a rough gig. And then you got to answer the questions for it.
Now,
after you left New York, you had one of the best jobs I think I've ever heard of when you were working for MLB in Italy. Tell us a little bit about that, because that just sounds like, I think I remember asking you if you needed a beat writer there in any way, shape, or form. But tell us what you did in Italy.
Well, you know, we took kids from all over Europe. We had them come in, and I managed the team, and it was great having these kids come in and play. Me and John McLaren worked together there, and we actually, it was like a spring training for these kids to teach them. We spent over a month, month and a half there with these kids from all over Europe, you know, Germany, Italy, obviously there, and yeah, just about every country had a kid coming in. It was, you know, we were trying to get them more interested in playing baseball and teaching the game the correct way. And it was just a blast. I mean, these kids really enjoyed every minute of it. We had some competitions. We actually, towards the end of the camp, would separate, you know, split the teams up and have them play against each other. And it was just a fun time, and it was great. You know, showing the kids how you really play the game and how much fun you can have playing the game.
And where were you based?
Tyrrhenia. Oh. Tyrrhenia, Italy. It was right near Pisa.
Oh, my gosh. So in Tuscany, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
The food.
You know, we had a day or two off each week, and we could go, you know, to Florence, take a train, everything, you know, is fairly close there where up where we were interested in going. And you could take a train almost anywhere there. It was great. Oh. It was very.
And the best food anywhere. That's some.
Oh, yeah. You know, we go in to eat at 6:30, and we're the only two, that and I would be the only two people in the restaurant. And by the time we're finished, people were starting to come in like about 9 o'clock to eat dinner with the little kids and everything. I'm thinking, what in the world? But they, you know, from 2 to 4 over there, they took their siesta. They had 2 hours of rest every day, so everything was obviously moved back a couple hours to them. So, you know, they ate very late over there.
Wow.
You know, we had to run to the restaurant if we go in around 6.
That's really just sounds amazing. Yeah. I was always very jealous about that, but those jobs and baseball jobs in Italy sound perfect. Now,
and
what
the
do
wine
you
over? The wine over there is cheaper than a Coke, you know? Yeah, they have so much wine that it was much cheaper than getting a, you know, a Coke to have for dinner.
Well, I mean, you got to then. I mean, really.
Oh, yeah.
Just makes economic sense. Now, I know you were doing some work for the Astros broadcasting over the last 2 years. What are you doing now? Are you going to go back to doing any broadcasting? What are your plans?
No, I don't think so. I've been finished for a couple of years now, you know, doing that. It was enjoyable. Worked with some great people, you know, Kevin Eschenfelder, wonderful guy. You know, he was the main guy I worked with. And, but I enjoyed staying in the game, and I'd go in early, go into the clubhouse, you know, get to talk to some old friends. But, you know, it just shows you how old I'm getting. The guys who, I don't even know if there's a player left playing that was on the field anywhere when I was managing. So it's getting thin. You know, Verlander here in Houston, yeah, he was with Detroit when I was, you know, managing in the American League. So there's still a handful of guys, but I'm running out of them.
Yeah. That must have been strange to watch everything that was unfolding with the cheating scandal there, too, especially being as close to A.J. Hinch as you are.
Yeah. I feel bad for AJ. You know, I know he evidently tried to put an end to it, but was unsuccessful. And obviously, it reflects on the manager and the general manager when things like that are happening on the field. you know, they won a championship, but I don't know if it was worth it.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, Art, what's the, kind of coming up next for you here? I know you're back to being able to see your family and your grandkids. Tell us, you've got how many grandkids?
Six.
Oh, my gosh. Six.
Yep.
That's great.
And they all live here in the Houston area, so they were all here yesterday helping me celebrate Father's Day, so it was wonderful.
That's wonderful. Well, we are so happy that you are back to full strength and healthy and safe. And continued best to you and your family. You were always such a gentleman in Oakland and treated us in the media so well and had such great teams. It's I think everyone has such fond memories of all of those teams and the job that you did.
Thank you, Susan. I miss the Oakland area and the Oakland fans and everything about it out there. And everybody affiliated with the team. There's still an awful lot of them out there. I think of them often and try to stay in touch, especially when they come into town here. So try to go out to lunch with a few of them.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us on A's Plus. Former A's manager, Art Howe.
Thank you, Susan.
Thanks again to Art Howe for joining us on A's Plus. Our producers today were King Kaufman and G. Allen Johnson. We will be back again next week with more A's Plus. Thanks for listening.